The clock says it's several minutes after 9 in the a.m. Our first show in November of 2018, our first show after the end of daylight savings time. And you might say, well, what show is this person referring to? In fact, who is this person talking? Well, I'm Adam Lepp, the computer guy, webmaster, many things I do here at the great WWGH radio station. But, of course, being the time that it is, several minutes after 9 in the a.m., again, Eastern Standard Time, it is time for a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. The intern has informed me that she has properly dialed up Dr. Ron Feinman in much warmer environs of Boca Raton, Florida, to talk about the election tomorrow, current politics, and always room for wisecracks, giggles, and laughter, because, you know, humor is the best medicine. And, of course, we always talk about Donald and his lovely wife and his son and his older kids and whatever else we feel like racking our brains with. Ron, how are you doing on this eve of Election Day?
Good morning. I'm doing fine. I'm just concerned about what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm hopeful it'll be a good result in my perspective that the Democrats win back the House of Representatives and maybe win the Senate, but more likely a 50-50 tie and many gains in governorships, probably from 16 to about 26 or 27, including most of the Midwest in the governorships.
Well, one thing I can assure you of, there will be a surprise or two. And if there's anything victorious on the R side, I'm sure Donald Trump will be taking credit for it, as he likes to do.
Yes.
It's part of the fun, but not necessarily good fun. Remember that meme I sent you, Ron, a couple days ago, showing Donald Trump as Santa Claus, saying he's making his list, checking it twice, going to find out who's being deported by ICE? What did you think about that?
I don't think it's really funny, but it's still like trying to laugh at something that's really a terrible thing, I think.
But you might admit that, just like me, you did giggle a little bit. I'm trying to say that with a straight face, because it is sort of funny. But that's
but not for those people who are being victimized, but yes, because there's some people who have been here for decades and have served in the military and are being deported, and that's wrong.
It seems like Trump wants to change the whole system of immigration rules and this naturalization concept. Apparently he thinks he can change the Constitution and rewrite history. But as has been talked about by yourself and other experts online, you just can't do that, right? You can't just go ahead and erase something that's been in place for a while. We do have a process. We do have a system.
Yeah, birthright citizenship is 150 years old in the 1868 14th Amendment, and the only way to get rid of it, in theory, is to have another amendment, like in the case of prohibition of liquor. The 18th Amendment was repealed by the 21st Amendment, you know, 14 years later. That's the only way to take something out of the Constitution or its amendments, another amendment, and that requires a two-thirds vote of each House of Congress and three-fourths of the state's legislatures, which would mean 38 out of 50 states would have to ratify it, and it would take time, and it would never get a two-thirds vote in both houses to begin with.
So this birthright citizenship change ain't going to happen, as they say.
And Lindsey Graham talking about having legislation, I'm thinking, what is wrong with you? Legislation is not going to change what's in an amendment. If that was the case, in theory, I'm just saying, we could say, let's have legislation to abolish the Electoral College. But you can't do that, only by amendment, because it's in the Constitution. So we're stuck with the Electoral College.
So not quite that simple. Maybe some of these folks should take a remedial history and government class.
Yes, it'd be a good idea if he took a course, both courses with me, and maybe if he, I'm talking about Donald Trump, took my American Presidency course at Florida Atlantic University, which started registration on Monday, and it's filled up, 35 students in 5 days. Imagine that.
Well, Donald, if you're listening, maybe you should enroll. I would agree. Maybe he should take
I'll allow
your class.
An override.
that would certainly be interesting to have Donald Trump as one of your students.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I'd like to be a spot on the wall during that class.
Even if he just visited one class, it'd be interesting, yes.
Going to...
Welcome to the class. I wouldn't turn it down. I wouldn't say you can't come in, but it would never happen, of course.
Well, if it did, it would certainly be unusual, and again, very amusing, and I would think I'd be on the next train to Florida so I could sit there and audit the class. because the thought of you teaching something to Donald Trump, remembering you guys were born in the same hospital about a year apart, so you do have some connections.
Yeah, a year and a half apart in Jamaica Hospital in Queens, New York. It's so funny. And I've joked with people that we were switched at birth, but of course we were a year and a half apart. I'm older than him.
Well, something tells me that your son David wouldn't mind being a spot on the wall either. As between the two of us, it would be a giggling marathon. Giggling marathon. Speaking of midnight trains, let's take the midnight train to Georgia with their very well-watched and hotly contested gubernatorial race. According to CNN, yesterday on Sunday, Democratic candidate Stacey Abrams dismissed criticism from, President Donald Trump, after he called her unqualified to lead the state. On CNN's State of the Union, she said, "He's wrong. As President Obama pointed out, I am the most qualified candidate running." So what are her qualifications? She went to Yale Law School. Well, that's pretty good. That's one of the best law schools in the world. Was the minority leader in the Georgia State House of Representatives and is in a closely fought race against her opponent, Secretary of State Brian Kemp, to succeed current Republican Governor Nathan Deal. Trump recently said she was not qualified. Obama rebutted the point in a visit to the state, calling her the most experienced, most qualified candidate in this race. When Trump was asked why he doesn't think that Abrams is qualified, he said, "Take a look at her past, what she wants to do, and what she has in mind for the state." He did not elaborate, according to CNN, on what he was referring to or provide further evidence on his attack against Abrams. Ron, I hate to ask this, but do you think it might be racially motivated since Abrams is black?
I don't think it is. I know it is. And I want to point out she's also a novelist. She's published novelist. She's a very talented lady. And you know, just as with Andrew Gillum, who he denounces in Florida, the African-American male governor candidate for the Democrats, he cannot say anything good about anyone who is African-American, other than maybe Ben Carson, his housing secretary, and not much about women who are running for office, unless maybe it's Marsha Blackburn in Tennessee, who, of course, gets along well with him. But I don't think there's any question of racism. It's very clear that that's the case. Sorry. And there's already been people writing, he's the most racist president we've ever had. He's pushing Andrew Johnson up a peg to be not the worst racist president, the second worst.
I mean, in 2018, I hate to ask that, I can't believe the leader of the free world would base something on race. And secondarily, the fact that she's female, that's very uncool. And
the point is, he says, "I'm qualified." How about him? Well, how was he qualified to be president? He had absolutely no experience in government or the military, had no background at all, so he was unqualified. But the Electoral College was what elected him, not the popular vote. At least this year, all the elections are going to be based on popular vote. Only the presidency is not decided automatically by that, but every election Tuesday is going to be decided by who gets the most votes, which is the small-d Democratic way to do things.
So it's kind of sad and really upsets me that that is the reason. And we can only prognosticate because he's not going to say it, but I would tend to agree with you. I think there are other factors, but think that her race and secondarily her gender is the reason why he's saying that. Very uncool. Doesn't make the United States look very good, does it? When we have female leaders of the world, Germany, for example, past prime ministers of the United Kingdom, people that are female that do a very good job. And as it is, the prime minister of Germany certainly is no fan of Mr. Trump. And this just makes it look even worse for him. And it's, again, just it makes the United States not look like the world leader that we've always thought it was. And
really a world leader. We're repudiating every treaty and agreement with other nations, particularly in NATO. So we have really lost our alliance, not officially, but unofficially. They all ignore him, what he has to say. Even our Defense Department doesn't follow through on everything he talks about with the border. You know, they just say, and they do what they want, and he doesn't seem to be even be aware that they're not doing what he's saying.
Yeah, and I would, again, using the UK as an example, Theresa May, who is a conservative, Margaret Thatcher, a conservative. And I understand, Ron, that Donald Trump doesn't have the knowledge of history that you do. But let's pretend, like we probably have to pretend, that he knows about Margaret Thatcher and and knows even knows who Theresa May is. Again, they're conservatives. But I mean, it's a little different definition of a conservative. They're actually a little more like I am, conservative economically, but more progressive when it comes to people issues, as the United Kingdom tends to be. What do you think Donald would think about about those two fine ladies? Would he still discount them because they are female, or would he understand? Well, in many ways, we agree.
Well, I don't know if he remembers Margaret Thatcher, honestly, since that's old news. She's been out of office a long time, 30 years. But I do that he doesn't have a lot of regard for either Theresa May or for Angela Merkel. I don't think he does. And he's shown it when he's met with them. You know, he's very dismissive, and they just tolerate him. You can see on their face and their expression, their body language, that they're not very happy. But neither is French President Macron, and neither is any of the other so-called, and not just so-called, really democratic small-D leaders. But the authoritarian leaders know how to flatter him as Saudi Arabia's crown prince, and, of course, North Korea's leader, and China's leader, and, of course, obviously the Russian Federation leader, Putin. They all know how to flatter him, but they're also listening in on his phone calls, and he seems to be unaware of that. It's just amazing, you know, how naive he is, how stupid he is.
I mean, just because I lived many years of my life almost walking distance to the Canadian border, I'm seeing our relations with Canada really crumbling, and they're supposed to be our biggest ally. Now, granted, I find Trudeau to be too liberal, and I don't agree with a lot of things he says, but he is a good person, and I know he does love his country and tries to get along with everybody. But I don't fault that liberalism of his for this crumbling relation, and having such a negative, profound effect on our relations with our close neighbor up north. That really has a rippling effect with a lot of things, including, I think, our relationship with the United Kingdom. And
yes, and also with Mexico, we have the worst relations right now since the time of Woodrow Wilson, the Mexican Revolution 100 years ago. I mean, the new Mexican president coming in is more to the left of the one that's leaving. And of course, they all say they want to try to get along, but I have a feeling we're going to have more troubles with Mexico than we've had. And he has really provoked a bad relationship with a neighbor who has a few thousand miles of boundary with us. Not a smart idea.
So crumbling relations with, I would say, our probably three biggest allies, the United Kingdom, Canada, and Mexico. That's something we don't always hear too much about in the Trump administration, but I think it's pretty important. Again, bit of a biased opinion, yes, because I went to school, worked in radio, and 20 miles from the Canadian border. So Canada had a big influence. But even here in Ohio, we're just 200 miles from the border. And I like to think that even if we don't agree on stuff, that we can still shake hands and be friends. I would think that if one of the Bushes, who was certainly a conservative, but someone I think with good diplomatic skills, either of them, were in office with Justin Trudeau as prime minister, they're not going to agree on a lot of stuff. Again, I'll fully say it. I find Trudeau to be very, very far to the left and agree with some things, but some things I think he's totally out there, for lack of a better term. But I know he is a good person. I know he likes to get along with everybody, and that's very important in his office, just like it is with the president. And that's, of course, something that Donald Trump probably isn't too strong at, to put it mildly. But I think that, again, they can shake hands and still agree to get along and still consider each other to be a big ally. And would you agree, Ron?
Yeah, I think John Kasich.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think John Kasich would be very close to what Trudeau.
And that is,
get along
that just
better.
Is crumbling yeah. right now. And that's one thing maybe we don't talk about that often in the media, but it is poor thing that's going on right now with the administration. Let's hope we can mend it. And
I'm not sure we can mend it as long as Trump is in office. If Mike Pence were to succeed him, it might be different, because although he goes along with him, I think he would change things in some directions that would be good, but in other directions it'd be worse. I think domestically it probably would be worse with the religion issue in Pence's mind, but I think in foreign affairs he probably would try to heal some of the troubles that have been created by Trump.
I said the U.S. president's considered to be the leader of the free world and should set the example. And again, talk about the Bushes. You and I don't agree with a lot of their policies, but we agree they're good men and they do understand the importance to sincerely shake hands with the other party and say, well, we don't agree, but we're still friends and life goes on. We still have a lot of respect for each other. And I think Donald Trump needs to take a lesson in that. I don't know how else to say it, but that's one thing that does upset me about the administration and just makes me hard sometimes to be glad that I'm living in this great country, but maybe things will turn around. Who knows? Dr. Feinman is the author of the blog that's been around for 10 and a half years called theprogressiveprofessor.com, talking about presidential history, current events, and other good stuff. On Saturday, the 3rd, he wrote about a topic that we talk about a lot, but I think it's an important topic and an interesting one, presidential demographics, demographics of politicians, potential for more women, senators, and governors after these elections that are coming up tomorrow, mostly Democrats. Particularly in the Democratic Party, women will have a much greater role after the midterm elections, no matter who might lose. 53 women are running for the Senate, 476 running for the House. But check this out. In 2012, it was 36 for the Senate, 298 for the House. So an increase of about 50% in both cases. 12 women are running for governor. We talked about Stacey Abrams, Laura Kelly in Kansas, Gretchen Whitmer in nearby Michigan, Molly Kelly, that's a good name, Molly Kelly in New Hampshire. Kind of a musical sounding, isn't it? Janet Mills
and Laura Kelly in Kansas.
In Maine.
So it's two Kellys running.
Christine Hallquist in Vermont. Michelle Lujan Grisham in New Mexico. Another good name. All Democrats, joining two other Democratic women governors and four Republican women governors at present. And we talked about some strong suspicions, Ron, that Donald Trump is a misogynist. He doesn't believe women are capable of the things that men are, doesn't feel women are really at the same level of men. And again, I don't think you and I would agree with that whatsoever.
Absolutely not agree.
There are differences between men and women, but kind of in the end, we're all equivalent and we're all human beings anyway. We should embrace our differences, but not think less of those who are different. If we acquire more female governors, how is that going to affect Donald Trump and kind of how he gets along with people? Do you think maybe we can get it through his thick head that women, maybe you heard that joke, that kind of that joke once, Ron, that a woman's place is in the House and the Senate, you know, which is a takeoff on a woman's place is in the home. So if we do get more women in government and as governors, is that going to have an effect on Donald Trump? Can we get it through his thick head, or is he just too stubborn to change what he thinks?
I think it's going to be more conflict because we're going to have more congresswomen for sure, and we're going to have good chance more women senators and definitely more women governors. And, you know, some of them I think are really crucial. The one that seems like a long shot is, of course, one of the two Kellys, and that would be Laura Kelly in Kansas, who's running against Chris Kobach, the state secretary of state, who's interfering with a vote count by limiting who can vote, just as in Georgia with Kemp interfering with, you know, in that election that he's running against. Abrams and Chris Kobach is an original nativist, a person who's been trying his best in Kansas and elsewhere, including on a presidential commission to limit the right to vote. And he's now on the ballot. And that would be, I wrote about it just, you know, a couple of days ago. It'd be a great victory if Chris Kobach in Kansas could lose to, you know, to indeed Laura Kelly. And this is after Sam Brownback was such a disastrous governor of Kansas. This is part of a wave that seems to be seemingly happening that the whole Midwest may go Democratic in the governorships, meaning Michigan, Wisconsin, getting rid of Scott Walker, hopefully there. Also Ohio, very good chance Richard Cordray can win in Ohio. And also in Illinois that the Democrat can win, J.D. Pritzker. And even some talk, Oklahoma, Kansas, and indeed South Dakota may have Democratic governors, and that will affect reapportionment of seats in 2020 after the census. And this could really be a major victory for the Democrats, even if they lose control of the Senate, or you know, in the sense of not gaining it, because I think they're going to win the House and they're going to gain a lot of governorships no matter what.
Ron, you've written about two essentially dream teams for Republicans as well as for Democrats. We'll talk about the Republicans, and you wrote this yesterday. For anyone who is progressive, there is a dream list of Republicans to defeat. Of course, the one most familiar would be Ted Cruz, who always seems to be in the news. That rhymes, doesn't it? Arguably the most important of all to defeat, as he is truly disgraceful and as a man and a senator, hated by his own Senate colleagues, including those of his own party. Well, that's not too good, is it? In 2016, he wrote that he was worse than Trump and still considers him to be purely evil in his demagoguery. And it's hoped that Texas will elect Beto O'Rourke, a truly dynamic and inspiring candidate. Close to your home turf, Ron, I know you already voted, and something tells me you didn't vote for Rick Scott because you describe him.
No, I voted for Bill governor, Nelson for the Senate.
The existing governor of Florida, because you say he's a truly horrific leader for the past 8 years, among the very worst of all Republican governors. So you voted for Bill Nelson. Bill Nelson, I'm sorry, is whom he's running against for a Senate seat. But it's hoped that Nelson, who is a moderate and therefore perfect for the complex politics of Florida, will be able to retire Scott from public life. I know we talked about this a few weeks ago, Ron, but reiterate for our listeners, what is it about Rick Scott that you find so horrific?
Well, Rick Scott refused to expand Medicaid. He refused to indeed, allow people to get Obamacare for pre-existing conditions, although now he's claiming otherwise. He also was bent on the environment, with the issue of the environment in the state of Florida. He also enriched himself in office, and he had a corrupt background in health care, and indeed he paid a heavy fine. He should have gone to prison. He should never have been allowed to run for office after the crimes he got involved with Medicare fraud, but he did win both times for governor by 1% of the vote. So every vote matters, and that's the big issue across the country. Everybody has to get out and vote. Whatever side you're on, you can't afford to sit home. This is the most crucial midterm election nationally in maybe 50 years, because usually we don't focus on midterms as much, but they do matter, and this is a real important moment to make sure everybody's voting, because it will affect the future up in 2020 and beyond.
So whom did you vote for governor, and why did you vote for this person that you chose?
Oh, Andrew Gillum, obviously. Ron DeSantis, I hate to say it, but I think looking at Ron DeSantis' background, he makes Rick Scott look good. That's how bad things are. You know, it's almost like if it had been Rick Scott running again, if he could have run again against Gillum, it would be terrible. But Ron DeSantis is an extreme right-winger. He is a Trump loyalist to the extreme, and he's been involved with racial supremacy groups in his past, which he denies, and he's been horrible in the debates that he's had with Andrew Gillum. He has not performed well. And, you know, like you and I joked, like you said, I'm not going to vote for someone named Ron because that's my name. I said, I don't vote by the name. No, I'm not voting for Ron. So I voted for Andrew.
And you feel he would be a good governor?
Yes, absolutely. And I think he has an Obama-like way about him that I think he would be, in my mind, quite a great governor and a big switch from 20 years of Republican governors. I think we need a change. It's a long time to have one party in control of the governorship in any state.
Yeah, I do want to bring up, we discussed this a couple months ago, that although Ron is a Democrat, he's a moderate Democrat. I said, not a Bernie Sanders type, as we've talked about.
No.
As you know, I'm not a fan of that guy. And often, Ron will find good things in Republicans, those who are a little more moderate. I bring up Jeb Bush from, of course, the Bush family, a former governor, whom you aren't greatest fan of, but felt he was at least decent. One thing that he did do well, as you mentioned, and this is important in Florida, he handled the hurricanes very well. And that's an important thing in Florida, being a very hurricane-prone state, as we've seen in recent history. And I think it's every state obviously has its own needs, and when you're on the Gulf Coast preparing for natural disasters, when it seems like hurricanes are becoming more prominent, whether or not it's due to global warming, that's up for debate. I say it probably is, but we could have a debate about that one also. But how a governor handles natural disasters, that's a biggie also. The recent Hurricane Michael that affected northwestern Florida, the Panhandle, how did Scott do with that?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I don't think he did terribly, but I don't think Rick Scott has ever dealt with hurricanes, including earlier ones, quite like Bush did. And he did go after the Puerto Rican vote when Puerto Ricans, because of last year's hurricane, came to Florida. And, you know, he never showed interest in that issue before, but suddenly, he's very much trying to change his image. He's smiling more, and he's not a big smiler, and he's been bullying more. But, you know, the fact is the record is clear that he's going to not do much for anybody who's not well-to-do in Florida if he is in the Senate. And, you know, I think he would be a possible candidate for the Republicans for president in 2024. I could see him running, you know, after 6 years of the Senate, eight years as governor. He'll be about 71 then. He's 65 now. But I could see him possibly considering running in 2024. And I just would like to see him retired.
So your candidate of
choice. I would like Scott Walker in Wisconsin to be retired.
Right. Your candidate of choice, Ron, Andrew Gillum, how do you think he would handle a hurricane?
Well, I think he'd handle it better. It's hard to know until it happens, but I think his whole attitude is that the government should do more. I don't think, you know, Scott is very much a person who believes in less government. And I think when it comes to environment and to hurricanes and things like that, you need more government, not less government. So it's hard to know for sure until the situation arises, but I think he would show more compassion and empathy because Scott is not big on that.
But we do agree that in Florida, having a governor with a plan in case of a natural disaster, because it's inevitable, is important. In Ohio, we do have tornadoes and we have floods, but hurricanes are kind of a separate beast. And in a hurricane-prone state, I think it's very important. And all I can say is, yeah, we shall see. But when something is inevitable, we need to be prepared properly. And to me, that's a good thing about Jeb Bush. It shows that he thought he could think on his feet and helps people out without doing things that may not be effective. And but again, the Bush family, although we don't agree with their policies in some cases, they have so much experience in business and in politics, and that does help, as we've seen, some of the shortcomings of the current administration. So there's good and bad, obviously, on every side. Mentioned another Scott. This would be Scott Walker of Wisconsin, who you were also not a fan of. In fact, you write, Ron, that he may be worse than Rick Scott. So recapitulate for our listeners. I always love that word, recapitulate. What exactly is so bad about Scott Walker of Wisconsin?
Well, Scott Walker has also tried to cut the number of people down who can vote over his 8 years. He's also cut back on labor rights and the rights of teachers and education in Wisconsin. And his opponent, Tony Evers, is the state superintendent of public instruction, and I think would be a vast improvement, because you got to remember, Wisconsin has an image of being a progressive state. It's the state of Robert La Follette Sr., Robert La Follette Jr., Gaylord Nelson, William Proxmire, and others like that. It's been a state that always stood out as a leader on progressive goals, but under Walker, it's been really going far to the right, and it has really, I think, undermine Wisconsin's reputation and its economic stability.
So in some of these other states in the eastern United States, we could see some massive changes, candidates one extreme or the other. And again, as I told people last week, get off your rear end and vote.
Yes.
I personally believe people should vote on Election Day. That's when I vote, but you can vote early, as Ron has done. Vote on Election Day, but please get your hiney to the ballots. There's no excuse not to, and especially if candidates whom you don't like win, you have no right to complain if you didn't vote. I don't expect my candidates all to be victorious, but since I vote, I have the right to complain about it, as does Ron, and we do a lot of that in the show, of course.
I do think that Richard Cordray has an edge in the election in Ohio, but when I gather in polls, he's slightly ahead, isn't he?
And we'll take Ohio governors for 100, Alex, and we'll talk about that a little later in the show. Ever since I told you, Ron, that Cordray was a five-time Jeopardy retired champion, you've been talking about a lot of people with Scott last week and on your blog, so I like to think that I've had an influence on you, but this Jeopardy champion, which I think is important.
I was educated by you.
Yeah, I want someone intelligent with a good broad-based knowledge in government, and hate to bring it up again, but our current president is really lacking in that category. But, you know, Cordray, he ain't stupid. And as I think I mentioned also last week, he took his Jeopardy winnings and used it to pay his debt from law school. So rather smart cookie the guy
is. Smart. Yes. Plus, and he's only 59. So I could see him as Ohio governor and possibly in the future a presidential contender, because he's still young. You know?
And he's from Grove City, where I used to live. In fact, he went to the same high school, Grove City High, that I went to. And he isn't much older than I am, so he went a little bit before I did, but we almost crossed paths. A little trivia for you. Going to the more western part of the Northwest, Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach has spent his career trying to deny the right to vote and headed a presidential commission working to deny that right. He's running for governor against State Senator Laura Kelly. How do you think that one's going to turn out?
Well, I mean, Kobach is favored, so he's on my list of, you know, of hopes that he'll be defeated. That would be a massive victory if he was defeated, and it would also be so much better for Kansas, which deserves, you know, a government that deals with the issues of its population. It has not done so because of Sam Brownback being an absolutely horrific governor, and so he left to become the ambassador to the Vatican, of all things. Which is what he is for, you know, for President Trump. But the odds are against it. I have to admit, Kansas is a very difficult state. Just like I point out in that article, Congressman Steve King, who's probably the most outrageous and despicable Republican in the House, and now there's a movement to try to oust him, you know, and expel him if he gets reelected. He's such a white supremacist, racist, and nativist. So he has a challenger in his Iowa district, but he has won easily every time in his Western Iowa district, so it's going to be hard to stop him. And also David Bratt, what a name, a former economics professor who defeated Eric Cantor, the House Majority Leader, in a primary and then took over his seat from Richmond, Virginia, and is alive to the Tea Party movement, is facing a real challenge now from Abigail Spanberger, former Republican Senator John Warner has endorsed Spanberger over his own party nominee. So hopefully maybe David Bratt will be retired, maybe go back to teaching.
It's not brat like the food, right? It's actually brat.
I've heard it as brat, yes.
Okay, well, that's...
And maybe that's what we could say, he's a brat.
Do we call his kids little brats? I mean, literally.
Yes. I'm not sure he has children, but I'm trying to think. Obviously, professors can be different. I'm thinking, I like to look him up. I've never looked him up. What kind of a rating does he get on Rate My Professors as an economics professor? Because I was stunned at some of the things he has said and done, and I guess I sort of like thought... Well, maybe economics is different, but I'm just a little shocked by his Tea Party activism. But people are different, and, you know, I have some colleagues I don't necessarily agree with, so I guess that's just the way it is.
So Steve King of Iowa, obviously not the same as the author, Stephen King.
No.
Probably the most outrageous and despicable Republican in the House, openly white supremacist, racist, nativist demagogue who has stirred such outrage even among Republicans. Sounds like a pretty... objectionable dude. So we
don't... He is. He's often been called the male Michelle Bachmann, the former congresswoman from Minnesota who was always outrageous in what she said. She's no longer in the House, but they've been put on the same list as Tea Party people that are way off on the right. Very, even worse than David Bratt, actually, yes.
And as we come toward the home stretch of our show, once again, time flies. A dream list to elect. Beto O'Rourke, Andrew Gillum, Stacey Abrams, Gavin Newsom, and of course, Richard Cordray, our favorite Jeopardy champion. Wrote that in your
Who
blog.
I mentioned in that article.
Yeah, wrote that in your blog also late last week. Of course, Cordray hits close to home. It's a very close race. We really don't know who's going to win. It's within a couple percentage points. And we have two gentlemen who both are professional politicians, certainly are qualified, but we do find Mr. DeWine to be too far to the right on many issues, and I will certainly admit that I find Cordray too far to the left on some things, but I do find him to be the more intelligent person, and I think he is more qualified. I can't say that I'm jumping for joy about him, but the good well outweighs the bad, so I would give him a strong B+, and he will get my vote when I go to the ballot. I also look at the coolness factor, and I, again, being from Grove City, where I used to live, even going to the same school that I went to for a year, and being a game show champion, he's someone that I think would have good charisma, and I think it's time. He's held different offices in Ohio, and although I don't think DeWine would be a bad governor, I'd rather see Cordray sitting in the governor's mansion. So we shall see.
How about the Senate race? How about the Senate race in Ohio?
And Sherrod Brown is favored. Again, he really is too far to the left on a lot of things. But his opponent, I don't think I would like him. So I would say with a grade of B-, I will vote for Brown. He certainly is experienced. Again, another professional politician. But I think we've seen with the presidency that it isn't necessarily bad being a professional politician as long as you have other qualifications. Yeah. And that's what's good about Cordray. There are other things going for the guy.
Yeah, I wanted to mention on Brown that, of course, Brown has been talked about that if he had been selected by Hillary Clinton instead of Tim Kaine, she might have won those
states she lost. I would have supported
him. You know?
I think he would balance out the ticket, and the very left-wing people that voted for Sanders would find Brown to be likable.
And he might decide to run for president. He and of course, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota would be two Midwestern Democrats who might run, you know, for the presidency.
And being from Ohio, that would have certainly turned things around, and Hillary very likely would have won this state and would have been a very different result. I don't think Tim Kaine was a good choice. It wasn't as bad of a choice as the, they called it, coldest state, hottest governor, Sarah Palin, of course, from Alaska, chosen by the late John McCain, which I think is probably, in my lifetime, the worst, by far, vice president choice in history. But I think Brown would have been a good choice, and we all make boo-boos, but life goes on. At least the Trump presidency gives us things to giggle about, although I wouldn't necessarily say it's always giggling.
I get angry about, too.
But it's a lot of stuff to talk about. So, as I said, life goes on, we live and we learn, and every day we find new horizons, new beginnings, and new things to shoot the breeze about. Going west to California, Gavin Newsom is expected to win as mayor of San Francisco 14 years ago. He performed the first gay wedding, which I think is a good milestone. It's a coolness thing, again, like being the Jeopardy champion for Cordray, but I think it bodes well for him, shows that he appeals to different kinds of people and looks at the person, not just the demographic or other things that really aren't that relevant other than possibly being part of the coolness factor. He has charisma.
Yeah, I wanted to mention that his former wife, Kimberly Guilfoyle, is now the girlfriend of Donald Trump Jr. I thought that was interesting.
Oh. Well, politics makes strange bedfellows, doesn't it? And
I mean, imagine if somehow Newsom ran for president, which he might, probably won't, and became the nominee, and it ended up she probably is going to marry Donald Trump Jr., so her former husband would be the opponent of, in theory, her future father-in-law. That would be a wild thing.
That would certainly be unusual, wouldn't it? I could see the National Enquirer feasting on that story. So Newsom drips with charisma and also a potential future presidential candidate. So many things going on tomorrow, and I don't want to sound like a broken record, folks. Get your heinies to the voting booth. Vote for the person you like. I don't care if you're voting for someone that I don't like. I think I've made it pretty clear what I'm voting for, whom I'm voting for. It's okay. We're Americans, and I respect people's differences. Make your decision. Cast your ballot. It's one of the great things we treasure as Americans. And the station will have election night coverage Tuesday all night until everything has been decided, or until, I guess, until the sun comes up on Wednesday morning, whichever comes first. So be tuned here to your favorite radio station for great election night coverage. And for our listeners out of state, you know, what happens in Ohio tends to affect the rest of the world. As we have, Brown very well could be a future VP candidate, even presidential candidate. Cordray, again, relatively young man with a lot of experience. He doesn't mind being on TV. Once again, I bring up Jeopardy, so I think he'd be very good as a presidential debater. He certainly has held his own in other debates. He certainly has his eyes on the presidency. And of course, John Kasich, we're not done with him either. So what happens in Ohio affects the rest of the world. So feel free to listen to our station. Learn more about these Ohio politicians who might end up being in office on a national level.
And now, so I want to also point out that Warren G. Harding just had a birthday. November 2nd was his birthday.
November 2nd.
So that means he is now, 153 years old, I guess. Warren G. Harding, looking pretty good, huh?
Yeah, not too bad. 153 years old.
And he shares the birthday with James K. Polk.
How about that? Ron, of course, our official presidentologist, who knows all kinds of facts, arcane and otherwise, about our past, present, and future presidents. And that's what's fun about talking with him on the air. You learn something new every day. hopefully this...
And he's 70 years older. He's, Polk is 70 years older than Harding. He was, of course, dead already, but he was born in 1795 and Harding in 1865.
Hopefully this show has stimulated a few brain cells, and if so, mission accomplished. Next time we meet, Ron, I'm sure it'll be an interesting conversation. We probably can spend three quarters of the show discussing the upsets, because I'm sure there will be some.
Yes.
As well as possibly some of the non-surprises. I would think the governor race in Florida and Ohio and also in Georgia will be at the top of the list. Ron did speak with Scott Spears last week. Honestly, I forget when because it was rescheduled so many times, but sometime last week.
It was Wednesday.
Yeah, it was Halloween, which I think might have been appropriate.
Yes.
Scott and Ron had a talk about politics,
yeah.
Election, other stuff. And if you didn't get a chance to listen to the show, that's okay. We won't take any points off. We won't spank you or anything. Just go to the Now with Scott Spears section on our website, and you can listen to the show online. You can also go to Ron's blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com, for an archive of his radio appearances, because it's also there. With the other 172 times he's been on this station. We greatly appreciate his commentary, his excellent words.
172.
And, of course, always a laugh or two when he and I get together on the airwaves. Thanks again, Ron, for being with us. We probably have to rest up a little bit to watch the election returns tomorrow, and we'll see what happens. It'll be.
Let's pray for the best results, whatever those
are. whatever they are, I'm sure there'll be a surprise or two, but... More stuff for us to talk about. Have a great rest of your day there in Florida, and we will talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.